Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism. First, I want to welcome Dave Isaac back to the show. Today, he'll be helping me break down how AI can help communicators and journalists. We're starting with a deep dive into how AI can optimize workflow, particularly by automating repetitive tasks. Everyone knows about that, right? Repetitive tasks, allowing us to focus on more strategic and creative work. For example, ChatGPT can draft newsletters, emails, and announcements, while Grammarly can enhance our writing. There are also other tools that we'll talk about. And there, of course, is Otter AI, which can transcribe interviews and generate summaries. In practice, you might use ChatGPT to generate the first draft of a company-wide announcement and then Grammarly to polish it. This approach speeds up the process and ensures your message aligns with your brand's voice. But Dave, tell us more. Optimization, I know you had mentioned, it sounds like one of those words. What does it really mean? So walk us through this.
Yeah, Yumi, first of all, thanks for having me back. Really appreciate it and great to be with you once again. I think that when you talk about optimizing workflows, that sounds like such a proper term to me that it's like, I know my own progressions. And maybe some of that is workflow, and it's just, it sounds more formal than I believe it to be. So you mentioned a couple of tools. There's a lot out there that can really help you. And ChatGPT, I'm a fan of Claude myself as a writing tool, but both of them can certainly be used to automate parts of writing. And I think the biggest key to doing that is to provide examples of something that you like, that was a good draft the first time you did it. I have a newsletter that I write every week. It's on our website at gregoryfca.com. It's also on our LinkedIn page called This Week in AI. So certainly there are parts of that that I will turn over to ChatGPT and say, I'm almost there. I've got like three paragraphs, help me wrap this up and, you know, apply what we're talking about to an audience of communicators. Even though I would probably never take verbatim what it gives me, it gives me a really good first draft, or at least sparks an idea and gets me most of the way there. And then I can take it to a word processor and finish it on my own. And I think people often go for the home run, right? They want to go 100%, do the whole thing. And it's like, you don't need that. Take some singles and doubles, play small ball. Because if you can get those little chunks of automation, that's a big time savings too. You don't have to go all or nothing. So there are certainly ways to generate some content. And each week we have individual tips that we give people, just kind of little hacks, right? So for instance, in ChatGPT, you have custom instructions. You also have memories. Both kind of serve the same function, where it's hey, remember this thing, not just in this prompt string, but in all prompt strings. And one of them, a colleague of mine, Zach Boyer, said, if I type P3O, provide three options. So if you're going like section by section and say, okay, next paragraph, go ahead, 3PO, it'll give you three versions of that instead of just the one. It's like a multiple choice test as you go, but you can only call it up when you need it. Maybe you don't need it in the next paragraph. You know exactly what you want to say, but that's just a good little hack, right? That can give you options when you need it. So I think there are plenty of little things like that with some of these tools. You know, there's a big emphasis on tokens and how many tokens you're using. So if I give a lot of source material to one of these AI tools, maybe I'll say, read and analyze it and only respond with got it, because otherwise it'll auto produce a summary and it's three paragraphs long and it's like, you're wasting tokens. We only have so many precious few. So that's another, like, just a little thing that I think can help, whether it's a journalist or a communicator or frankly, anybody who's using these AI tools to create content.
So what I heard, just to repeat back, number one, when we think about optimizing, think about creating your own original content to some degree and also customizing tools like ChatGPT so they know how you write, how you sound. And then using ChatGPT, for example, and typing in prompts that tell it, don't waste all my tokens, for example, by just saying, got it, which is something that we can do. And the other thing that you mentioned that your colleague does is something called typing in P3O. So meaning give me three options.
Right. Provide three options. It was just an acronym that he kind of produced on his own, but you could apply that several different ways. I thought that was really clever. And I've started adopting that as well. Now, ChatGPT is unique in that it has that feature of memories. I wish Claude did have that. In-house at Gregory FCA, we had a tool in the early days of AI that produced multiple options for everything. And I kind of missed that feature. But AI, as we all know, has been going so lightning fast that we got lapped pretty quickly with that technology. And we started using, you know, the external tools like ChatGPT and Claude just because it was more feasible to work that way. But, you know, there are certainly other ways to save time. You mentioned audience. Like, once you have the AI tool understanding your audience and understanding the content you want to produce, let's say you have that good draft of a blog post. Then at the end, you say, okay, you have all this information. Now produce social copy that promotes this blog post, produce some web copy, produce a press release announcing this that we just did. So you're kind of getting more juice from your squeeze is kind of how I put it. I think that you can draw a little bit more out and make it a little bit more efficient. And again, I just want to emphasize the human element is so important in this. I don't think anybody should be outsourcing 100%, but there are a lot more efficiencies than you'd kind of think on the surface. And that's what I've found and my team has found.
Speaking of which, we've been focused on communications teams and how communicators can use these tools to optimize and to make things a little easier. Let's focus a little bit on journalists. I know your background was in journalism. One of the things I am quickly seeing, perhaps as a weakness, is that I think it's really hard for journalists to write stories on AI tools, with AI tools, and here's why. Most of what journalists do is looking for information that has not yet been shared. And these AI tools are using, you know, systems in which they're taking from things that have already been produced. So my advice or my tip would be, as a journalist, while you can use these tools for optimizing different things, expecting it to write part of a news story is just crazy because, you know, we want originality, we want fresh quotes, we want real people speaking. And I just don't think that AI tools can do that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you said there because, and particularly if you're also using it as a research tool. Because to your point, it's going to have to depend on somebody else's original journalism. But if you're in the field and you're, you know, even taking handwritten notes, you can have ChatGPT scan that and it will turn the image into, you know, written notes within ChatGPT's system, and it can use that as part of its knowledge base. You could use Otter, which you mentioned earlier, that will automatically generate a transcript of your interview, and you can use that to help generate your story. There are certainly ways that journalists could use these tools to still create original journalism, just kind of leveraging the resources that they have in a slightly different way than they might be used to.
I agree with you on that. And for example, recently I had a guest, Kiva Donnelly from Legitimate.net. And what Legitimate does is it's a place for journalists, whether you're freelance or working in newsrooms, and that you can sign up. And is it, you know, if you are, you know, deemed journalist, you know, you become a member that way, you can get 3 hours of free transcribing on that site. And I'm learning about other sites like YesSEO with Ryan Restivo, who is offering a place for journalists to find their best possible headlines that use search engine optimization techniques. So what I'm saying is there are tools that can optimize or help journalists, along with communicators, do their jobs more efficiently. Because, I mean, research is a huge part of it. And using tools like ChatGPT, Claude, Monica, Gemini, all of these tools are great because they can, many of them have the function and the ability to research previous articles. And so I felt like, okay, well, that's good. They can research the previous articles. Why don't I really want quotes. I always like to have attribution from the source. And I asked one of the tools to, you know, pull the best quotes out as you are talking about a point. And what I later learned during my fact-checking process is they had made up their own quotes. And that might be the generative process of AI.
My first thought is, thank goodness that you have a fact-checking process. Because I do feel like, in some situations, the hype train is moving so fast that people are like, wow, look at this. This is so impressive. And journalists are great at this. Taking that second and saying, maybe. Let's check. Let's see what's under the hood here. You know, I've certainly found those hallucinations in my times working with it as well. But it's not all the time that you get those hallucinations. And as long as you have that manual process in place to double check those outputs, you'll be able to catch those. I think the generative AI also creates quotes that sound predictable. So I don't know if that's why you looked up a particular quote and checked on it, or if you just checked the entire thing.
Well, let me tell you my secret. I went to a different AI tool, you know, just as any journalist would do, right? If you're going to have one source tell you that, you got to go and find some other sources. So I went from one, let's say it was ChatGPT that I started with. I dropped the copy into Monica and said, fact check it. And what Monica does is it goes through the web and searches, and then it points out where there might be an inaccuracy and why. And they'll also point out things like broken links. And that's when I started to discover through the AI tools themselves that there are a lot of inaccuracies, a lot of things that are probably being recreated because that's the nature of the system, if you will. And yet, when I'm saying this, is it's helpful to me because it means that you have tools that can also help you make sure that the information you got from one site is the best it can be. And because that really matters in journalism and really in all forms of communication where your audience trusts you and, you know, they want to believe what you're saying is true and right. And so this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, you know, putting myself back in those reporter's shoes for a moment, it's been a few years, but like that's the number one thing is that you don't want to break that unspoken contract of trust with your audience. And that's why I think a lot of journalists are reluctant to use some of these tools. But with the proper oversight, by using them responsibly, you can absolutely benefit from those efficiencies without sacrificing any of the autonomy of like, oh, I didn't produce this or I cheated, somebody else helped me through this kind of thing. In the early days of ChatGPT, there were so many copycats, like other AI tools that were trying to do what ChatGPT does. And ChatGPT has become like this Swiss Army knife because it has so many other capabilities. But now there are other tools that do things even beyond the scope of ChatGPT. You mentioned Monica finding broken links. Like ChatGPT will still hallucinate links for me occasionally. So it's interesting to come across some of these new tools that are doing things that ChatGPT isn't doing, that Claude isn't doing, that Gemini isn't doing, that DALL-E isn't doing. So I think that as the technology evolves and as these startups start thinking more creatively, we're going to see even more of that. And it might even be another explosion of AI capabilities, things that we're not even thinking of yet. But I think as long as you have that mindset of, okay, potentially this is really good. Potentially this can save me time. We just have to check and make sure everything is right and true and based in reality. And then I think you can start to feel a little bit better, because I had those hesitations myself in the early days of AI. I know some people would call me pessimistic, but I think I'm more realistic, and that healthy skepticism that I think every good journalist has. I think if you spend enough time with these tools and think about them, you know, in a responsible way, I think you can get past those reservations fairly easily.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing that I'm starting to see happen, just because I use these tools so much, because I'm talking about it all the time, is that when I started using these tools, they would rarely give me the source of information. And now every tool that I use will attempt to source that data. I'll say in my return, you know, my prompting style has become, I've gone from writing very long prompts, because when the, you know, for example, if ChatGPT did not know who I was, but I've customized it, I've added my things, and I've got lots of memory stored there. So now I find myself having a conversation. I'll say, hey, what was the most recent article 2024 on this topic? It'll return some articles, and I go, but what about this? Then it's like, oh, I forgot that. Let me look up that. And so I can go back and forth with it. So I feel hopeful about, I'm using hopeful a lot. Now you're going to start to think I'm AI. Yeah, I just feel like now I can basically go back and forth, like volleying back and forth, to really get at what I'm looking for without having to worry that I haven't said everything up front. And I remember when I was teaching AI in my classes about 2 semesters ago, that was what I had to do to get the best answer possible. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that prompt engineering was like this big, heavy term at that time, right? That it was in every job opening, and now you very rarely see that phrase anymore. I think it's become kind of like AI itself. It's become assumed. It's more, how do you use AI? And that's going to be different with every tool, I think. I would say that I prompt ChatGPT a little bit differently than I prompt Claude. I think that Claude has for me, better understanding of logic, where I don't necessarily need to spell everything out. Whereas with ChatGPT, I feel like I do, because if you don't connect those dots, it will not know to do it on its own, that kind of thing. So I think all of this is going to evolve over time. And as you were talking about, you know, the way that you interact with those tools, I was thinking just in a couple weeks, or I guess a couple months, by the end of this year, OpenAI says everybody will have the advanced voice modality available for every paying customer. So instead of having these interactions via text and using your fingers to type them out on a keyboard, you'll just be voicing them the way that we're speaking right now.
Will it be like our personal Siri or Alexa?
So it's interesting you say that, because, you know, in the newsletter that I wrote this week, I was kind of gathering up a bunch of reviews on this advanced voice mode. And Ethan Mollick, who's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania here in Philadelphia, he implanted the audio in his blog, where he was speaking to OpenAI, to ChatGPT, to that advanced voice mode, and having it speak to Siri. So there were 2 AIs speaking to one another. He was not really that involved. He would tell ChatGPT, like, ask Siri this. And it was interesting, just in the 90 seconds of that audio clip, ChatGPT was very much more human-like. That Siri was, you know, it's still old Siri. Like, we're still waiting for Apple Intelligence to come out as we record this today. New Siri isn't here yet. So you could just very clearly tell the difference between the two of them. And it was, one was like talking to a human and the other was like talking to a robot, like very clearly. But I think that'll all change. Like you mentioned a couple minutes ago, like, jokingly, that I think you know, maybe your AI, it's going to be really hard to tell what's AI and what's not. If you think it's hard today, it's going to be really hard in a couple weeks, a couple months.
I agree with you, because I tried Hey Jen.
Yep.
That was like, they were made famous because they were able to take Taylor Swift's song and she was singing in Chinese. And anyway, I tried out that tool, you know, downloaded my voice, my likeness and everything, and then ran, I typed in text, it turned it into video, and it wasn't that different from me. And maybe I'm a little robotic. I don't know. But getting back to what you were saying about the voice control and the voice, you know, being able to have discussions with voice, it reminds me of the Turing tests that were used in the 50s and the earlier part of our history, because as scientists and researchers were trying to humanize or to make artificial intelligence more human-like, and they would do these tests where they would, you know, have the voices and people would have to figure out, is it computer, is it real? And maybe we're at that point where ChatGPT, I guess, has surpassed the Turing test.
Yeah. And think about the name of your podcast, AI and Journalism. This is where the journalists are really going to come in handy, because it's going to be harder than ever to tell. You're already seeing it in the news cycle now with deep fakes and hard to tell what's real. Donald Trump using Taylor Swift AI deep fakes as part of his campaign. And, you know, we're going to need the journalists. We're going to need those boots on the ground. It's going to take a lot of effort for journalists to do that legwork of saying, nope, this is not real, and here's why. And it's going to take some convincing, because these tools are so good. They're becoming very authentic looking, sounding.
Well, you know, you just reminded me today, I was scrolling on Instagram and the video was like, failure, an AI failure kind of caption. And it had, have you heard of Ray Gun?
Oh, is this the Australian breakdancer? Yeah.
Yes. So they had taken her video, part of her dancing routine, and I guess put in some commands, and the video didn't work because it looks like she's turning into like animation type thing. I was thinking about sharing it with my followers, but then I thought, no, this is too crazy. But it's in my head, you know, like this video is far out. So, but what it reminded me of is that while AI is making huge advances, it's still going to have flaws. It's still going to have hallucinations, as you were mentioning. It's still not going to be quite right. And what should people do if they're using these tools, that they don't simply rely on these tools to create video and content that the public or the community wants for information and education?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of a twofold process there for trying to identify what's real and what's not. That's going to become really difficult. I think people are going to need help. Even journalists are going to need help. At some point, we're going to need standards for whether it's watermarks, which we've heard rumored, or some kind of metadata that you can double check to see if this is really authentic or not. But I think there's also a responsibility on anybody who's a content creator to be transparent about when and how they're using AI. And I think that with that transparency, you can save face. And it's not going to be, oh, Dave's lazy, he just passed this all off to Claude. There's an understanding of, okay, this is how he used it, and then he brought it into a word processor and ran through it manually. And there's all these different modalities now. We've talked about audio. We've talked about video. Like there's going to be different workflows for editing those things, because you're right. Today, the AI video is fairly obvious. There are some tools that are getting really good, but some of them, you know, you might have that human breakdancer morph into like an animal, and it's like, okay, this is just trippy. Like, you know,
it was trippy. It's a video in itself. You know, but
right. So I think it's all going to change really fast. And I think having a healthy level of skepticism alongside, you know, a willingness to use these tools and use them responsibly is the best route forward for everybody.
Thank you. Before we get back to optimization, I do want to ask you, and maybe even just talk about a little bit, that, you know, as these tools improve, as more companies are using these tools to automate, to simplify, to do whatever they need to do, there is a huge concern. Again, we've talked about this, but, you know, there's a concern that journalists who are out there on the ground getting stories from their local courthouses, local community meetings, they're not going to be around. They're not going to have their jobs. What do we say to that? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's just a plea that you have to make to these hedge funds that own newspapers, to these, you know, executives that see it as an asset instead of what we all, you know, love journalism for. Like there has to be a plea to them that, yeah, this is impressive technology. Don't just try and replace your whole newsroom and automate it, because it's not going to work. We've already seen failures of that. Gannett, Sports Illustrated, I think it was CNET. There are others where these publications were just creating these phantom personas and saying that these are reporters, and the human reporters are like, I don't have a colleague by that name. You know, it's luckily those instances have been called out. So again, I think there needs to be that level of trust, not just between a human reporter and their audience, but also whatever entities own these publications and the audience, and frankly, their staff as well, that these tools will be used for good, not as, you know, outsourcing the hard work of you know, human journalists that have done this for ages and hopefully will continue to do this for ages.
That's a good response. And it makes me think about something that Subbu Vincent, who has been on this show, said, which is, you know, when we think about AI, there's generative AI, there's narrow AI, there are these different types of AI. And one important thing in terms of disclosing the use of AI, if anyone uses Grammarly, that's AI. If anyone uses Otter, that's AI. And so what he brought up in the show was there's a bigger discussion about the fact that so many things that we do now have an AI component.
And frankly, they have for some time. And it was really that when ChatGPT burst onto the scene that everybody's like, oh, this is AI. and it kind of almost changed the definition. You know, as new things would come out, it's now put in the context of ChatGPT and some of these other tools. But the autocomplete on Gmail has been around for a while. That's AI. There are certainly some things that are happening very fast and are new and are experimental. There are other things that have been around for quite some time and are also AI.
Right. That's a good point. Okay, now I want to get back to tools and ways to make your life easier. You had mentioned Claude, and I haven't talked a lot about Claude on this show. Can you walk us through a little bit how Claude works?
Yeah, sure. So Claude is a large language model. Parent company is Anthropic. So what OpenAI is to ChatGPT, Anthropic is to Claude. And Anthropic was created from a few co-founders of OpenAI. And the whole basis for Anthropic is what they call constitutional AI, which is basically that the whole thing is steeped in the responsibility and trust and ethical use that we've been talking about throughout this show. And so I think with Claude, you're seeing maybe some features are a little bit slower to market than ChatGPT, but this is all subjective. I just happen to like the way that Claude writes. I think that there are some very easy AI tells out there. I'm sure a lot of your listeners could pick off very fast. I found less of that with Claude. I think Claude has, again, a higher reasoning level, logic level, that I found it to be easier to work with and a little bit more conversational in the way that you described with some of the tools that you work with earlier. So everybody's going to have their favorites. That's one of mine. There's also kind of a new feature in Claude called Artifacts, where it becomes like split screen. So all of your prompts are on one side. And if you're working on, you know, a piece of content, it'll just keep iterating that draft on the other side of the screen. So you don't have to keep scrolling up to see, what did I prompt 10 minutes ago? So it's a small time saver there, but something that I've come to appreciate working with Claude.
I also like the fact that when I am using Claude, I feel like the writing style they offer is so, I don't know if the word elevated is correct, you know, is the word I'm looking for, but it just feels like a much more thoughtful version of a sentence than ChatGPT, for example.
Yeah, exactly. That's what drew me to it initially as well. The writing is different, but there is certainly a style there, and it seems to even be more adaptable with the source material that you're giving it. Or if you say, okay, we're writing for such and such audience, it seems to have a better understanding of that and applies some of the context that audience would already understand before reading this content. So again, I've found it to be kind of my go-to tool for writing. Certainly ChatGPT does a lot more than Claude does, but just another one for the toolbox, I think.
Before I forget, you had mentioned there are some repeated or words that are dead giveaways that if you're using AI, and can you mention a couple, maybe three of those words?
Oh, sure. I mean, the biggest giveaway to me is when anything starts with in an ever-evolving landscape, era, whatever. That to me is a big dead giveaway. And it's funny because I was sitting on my patio the other day drinking a beer, and on the label, it had the term ever evolving. And this brewery's been around for a long time in my area. And I know that this label was before ChatGPT. And it was like, there it is, an organic use of ever evolving. I don't think I've seen an organic use since then. Every time I see it, I know, okay, that was written by AI. And unfortunately, Claude does that too. It will do that. But there are some other tells too, these metaphors of like beacons and labyrinths and some just very common phrasing that you see so often. Even some sentence structuring. It's when every sentence seems to be the same length. Another thing that I can't unsee now is if this structure of like not only, but also. So it's every time I see that, I'm like, nope, wasn't written by a human. And we've developed a list at our firm at Gregory FCA that is kind of like, we put them in two tiers, the dead giveaways where it's like, take them all out. And a second tier where it's like, this is starting to creep into a lot of language and use it if it makes sense, but it might tip somebody off that you're using AI. Maybe that doesn't matter necessarily. As we've talked about throughout this show, using these tools can be a great time saver. But I think that there's been so much content just purely outsourced to these AI tools that when I see some of this language, I'm like, all right, I don't even know if anybody read this before sending it out and hitting submit or publish or whatever. So there's quite a few. I'm sure you have your own list. I'm sure your listeners have their own list as well. But the internet is only growing with AI content. So I'm sure that those tells will become more and more obvious as time goes on.
So as we talk about other ways, we've talked about newsletters, content. Are there other ways that AI tools can, you know, make you more productive at work, whether you're a communicator or journalist?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a couple research tools. The one that I like using is Perplexity. It's come under fire a little bit recently. The lawsuit that's common right now is plagiarism for all of them. Anthropic was facing one from a bunch of authors recently. ChatGPT has certainly seen its share, or OpenAI has seen its share of plagiarism lawsuits. But Perplexity is one that I haven't seen very many hallucinations, because the whole premise of it is that it will go and find a source and show it to you. So if you click it, it better be there. And it's a very easy process for you to manually check on. But I've found that to be more accurate than relying on, say, the first page of Google, where it's so much sponsored content. Or apparently the AI overview is now better, but in the early days, Google's AI overview was terrible. It was telling people awful things, something about like putting glue on pizza, like ridiculous things, right? That like if any rational person read that, they'd be like, what? That can't possibly be right. And so, you know, all of these tools are evolving, but I think Perplexity is still for me the top research tool. And I know that that's obviously something that journalists have to do on a daily, hourly basis.
Yeah, by the minute, right? 24/7. Okay, now that we've talked about some of the tools, we talked about research, we talked about writing. What about, you know, the reality is for a lot of journalists that I talk to who come into my classrooms and are guest speakers, they're always telling me they have to do social media. They have to be thinking about posts and reels and all of that. Are there any AI tools that you would recommend that journalists can use to create content, you know, really to build their brand or the brand of the newsroom?
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I've kind of started doing with, whether it's Claude, ChatGPT, whatever. If you've developed the piece of content, you can then ask it to, hey, create some social copy for this platform or that platform, because these social media platforms pop up all the time too. You might have to explain to the AI tool what that audience is for that particular platform. But if you say for LinkedIn, it kind of knows, okay, a business audience. If you say, you know, Twitter or X, it goes, okay, a little bit more casual. So it has an inherent understanding of some of these platforms. But I think that's an easy way to kind of use these tools to say, okay, thanks for helping me develop the content. Now let's take it a step further and create something else from everything that we've been working to build here for the last however long it's taken you, however long your string of prompts are to get to your you know, last draft.
Speaking of prompts, I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about what are the best practices that journalists and communicators can be doing when they are on a tool. And let's maybe break it down by ChatGPT. Let's start with that. You know, what's the recommendation for a new person when they go to ChatGPT? How should they prompt, you know, if they're looking for some sources for a story they're doing about a government agency in town?
One of the things that may be a bit advanced for a beginner user is to just understand the knowledge cutoff of some of these tools. ChatGPT 4.0, I believe, is April, I think, of 2024. Claude 3.5 Sonnet maybe as well, but some of the others are like October 2023. So if you're asking about current events, it's not inherently going to know those things, and you're going to need the research tools. Even though ChatGPT can browse the internet, I've asked it, go find stories, and it'll give me a link. It's not a real link. You click on it, and it gives you the 404 error message, but it's like kind of right, because you'll say, how did it do this? And grab the title, and you search the title, and it exists somewhere else, but it wasn't new, and it was not on that page, it was on a different page. So I think you just have to be very careful of what it's giving you, especially for a beginner. I think that would be my best advice. And to use a tool that purports to be a research tool for research, instead of asking, like, Claude is not connected to the internet. If you ask Claude for research, it may tell you that it can't do it, but be aware that it can't do it.
So in terms of research, what is your suggestion then for communicators or journalists? Where should they go if not AI tools? The old school method?
Yeah, again, I think I found the best results and the quickest results with Perplexity. And then if I can't find it there, you know, I go to Google News, not just regular Google, because I think that's become filled with search engine marketing stuff and the sponsored links like we talked about earlier. Some companies that are just writing with SEO keywords to land on the page, but they don't give you necessarily the information that you're looking for. So using Google News, as opposed to regular Google, using Google Scholar if you're looking for academia versus regular Google, just kind of being a little bit more precise in where you're looking for information.
And one thing that reminds me, when you were talking earlier, I wanted to say this. So if you have, you know, so imagine that you're coming to an AI tool and it tells you all these things. How can you make sure what you get or what that person said on a video that you watched or something that may have been produced by AI, how can you make sure it's correct? And this is what I wanted to say earlier, because I've been a professor for what, 20 some years. And, you know, I think what makes journalists so good at their jobs is because journalists will go up to a stranger and ask a question. They'll call a person many, many times to say, look, this is what they're saying. I want to make sure it's right. Please call me back or please talk to me.
You're right. I was thinking a little bit more in terms of verifying on with what's on the internet, but that's an extremely good step, is to go right from the horse's mouth. And if you can get that human that allegedly said that, or get a statement from a company that has allegedly done something like that, is the most journalistic way to go about it.
Right. So I just didn't want to forget that part. But let's talk about, you were saying that for your job, you use AI tools in a lot of ways. Are there other ways that we haven't yet discussed that you use AI tools?
Our PR firm, Gregory FCA, we use Otter not just to record the audio, but there's a level of membership with Otter that you can send it as a meeting invite in your Google Meet, in your Zoom. It'll certainly capture the audio, but if there's a presentation, it'll capture the slide deck as well. It'll take screenshots. So I found that to be extra useful, because certainly getting that transcript allows you to focus more on the conversation. Instead of, you know, as a journalist, I had a manual like tape recorder, you know, and you're taking notes by hand and you're trying to make sure that you get verbatim what that person said. And you may have missed something where you could have asked a follow-up. So I particularly like Otter for that reason, because it allows me to be a little bit more engaged in that conversation. And Otter has its own AI chatbot in there as well, where after it's done recording and transcribing, you can say, what did so-and-so say about this? Just like you would with ChatGPT or Claude or any other of these chatbots. And it'll tell you, and then you can very easily go back to the transcript and verify it.
And that's a paid function, right?
It is. It is. Yes. Yeah. And with Otter, it'll show you in the transcript where you click, it'll play the audio as well. So you kind of have that double sourcing like we've talked about earlier. I think that is probably one of the biggest time efficiencies that we have here at the firm. I've also used it to generate images, ChatGPT, not Otter, but for the newsletter every week, we've there's an image that's associated with it, and those are all AI generated. Now there's a new one from Google, I think it's ImageFX, and that is even more lifelike. I think that a lot of these images, and this was a tip in our newsletter a couple of weeks ago, they all kind of have this like sheen to them almost. It looks like, I think it's called digital art, the style, and it's like kind of human, but not quite human. This ImageFX is one of the styles that you can click on. It's 35 millimeter film, and it looks very lifelike. So it very much looks like a stock image.
That's pretty impressive. I've been using the images from, you know, ChatGPT and DALL-E also in my blog posts where I'm talking about AI. And I kind of find it interesting because it does look kind of like this fantasy, not real art. A lot of times they'll misspell the words, but then I'm thinking that adds to the artistic value, you know, because it is just an image. But you're saying that Gemini has a product that makes it much more realistic then?
Yeah. So it just came out this week. And right now it's in, I think, the AI toolbox is what they call it. So it's ImageFX in the Google AI toolbox. And it's free to use. I didn't have to sign up any more than just, you know, associating my email, which is a Google email, with it. And the interesting thing about it, too, is that it generates like options, kind of like we talked about earlier for text. It gives three or four options of this scene that you've just asked for, whereas DALL-E will only give you one, and then you can edit it.
Okay, what? Hold on a second there. I want to talk about DALL-E because I just the other day, it gave me two options on an image. So it might be something that's happening, you know, quietly.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I was like, okay, you know, generate an image, blah, blah, blah. It's like, option A, option B. So I wonder if more of these AI tools will be coming out with that function, which is, you know, choices and without having to run the prompt again.
Yeah. And the thing that I like about DALL-E, while it may not be the most realistic, is there's that very granular selective edit where you can kind of use the paintbrush to go over a certain part and say, you know, change the color of this, or, you know, remove that flag from the scene and we won't see that the wind is blowing, just get the flag out or something like that. Now, this ImageFX also has that capability, but it doesn't seem to respond well to those edits. I was asking for a scene where somebody was at their desk, the laptop was on the desk, and they were speaking into the phone, but the phone is sitting on, like, it's on speakerphone, like it's on the desk. And every time it had somebody holding a phone up to their ear. And I kept saying, like, no, not on the ear, on the table.
We can't hear you. No, just kidding.
Right. Yeah. So sometimes the edits, it doesn't quite listen, but all these tools are some days they work great and some days they not quite.
That is so true. And the other thing I've also noticed, depending on how long I'm working on the same issue, revising, you know, prompting, telling it, no, that's not right, or maybe try it this way, it seems to get tired.
You know? Yeah, and I think that speaks to the context limits, the tokens, the how much usage you have in any particular prompt. And that's why I've kind of doesn't save that much space, but using that phrase of like, just say got it when I give you a piece of source material will save you a couple tokens anyway. Maybe it won't get so tired so quickly. But the other thing with Claude is that the more people use it, the more the bandwidth is used on the site, it will start limiting your use. You'll see a little message at the bottom. You have 5 messages left until 2 p.m. And it's like, oh, I'm not even close to there yet. So that can be a little bit frustrating. But, you know, just another thing that users need to be aware of with these tools.
And I actually was told in one of the platforms I was on, it said, start a new chat. I was like, okay. So now I make it a practice that if I am having kind of a long back and forth on research and fact checking and all of that, I will start new chats because I think that also helps to make sure that you get crystal clear responses from the top. Otherwise, it does seem to kind of wander. Meander.
And you know, for those beginner users, you have to start from scratch again. It's not going to remember any of the context of what you've done to that point. But maybe that process of getting somewhere where you didn't quite want to be will help you shorten your prompt or say more succinctly what you should be referring to in source material or something like that. Starting anew, you wouldn't want to repeat everything in the same process because you're probably going to get to the same place that you don't want to be.
If you're new and you're using a tool like Claude, should you say, here is who I am, this is what I'm writing about, this is my audience, I'm very interested in SEO, whatever it is, should you say all of those things in your original prompt when you're getting started on a new platform?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a helpful practice for a beginner. And I think that any journalist or communicator knows that the number one rule of storytelling is know your audience. So that's probably going to be something that you get into a prompt somewhere anyway, unless it's a press release or something like that, where it's kind of assumed that the audience is going to be journalists, or I don't know how many other personas are going to be like looking over the wire to see what comes through, what information comes through. But certainly that is something to always include, is at least your audience, if not also who you are or who you're trying to be. Like we, you know, at Gregory FCA, we're an agency. We have many clients, and oftentimes you have to say, okay, so assume that you're a tech company, a SaaS company that does X, Y, and Z, and your target audience is A, B, and C. I think that spelling it out that way is going to get you there a lot quicker.
I've done this several times where I'll say, you publish books on this topic. What is your feedback for my outline on the great American novel that is yet to be published?
Right. I've found that to be an excellent practice of kind of as you go along or before you ask the AI tool to start drafting, what more information do you need from me? Because that'll also help reduce the hallucinations in the end as well. Like I have a newborn at home. I'm pretty sleep deprived. I'm sure there are things that I'm leaving out. So I will always ask AI, like, what questions do you have before you start building this press release, blog post, whatever, because sometimes it'll point out something obvious. And I'm like, I can't believe I didn't include that in my prompt or tell you to do that, because that's going to be a pretty key part creating this content.
I realize when I'm asking a question, I'm assuming that AI is going to know everything that I'm thinking about and all the answers I want. How do you make sure, you know, what should you include?
Well, yeah, I think that's, you know, why I mentioned earlier that when I think about workflow optimization, there's so much that I just take for granted and assume that thinking things out and prompting things out in chunks, step by step, even helps me reframe the way that I'm thinking about something, because I'll have those inherent assumptions about like, okay, so the first paragraph of a press release is always like this, and yeah, you include a quote or whatever. And the AI tools are starting to know that too. But there are some things where it might give you something totally out of the format that you understand or would expect. And it's like, if you take a step back, you go, okay, well, yeah, of course it didn't know that because I didn't tell it. And I don't know what its training material was. So how would I have thought that it was going to do that automatically? It just kind of, it slows down your own process and the way that you think about things.
One of the things I also love that a lot of the AI tools, not just one, but I think all of them so far that I've used, is I will have feedback on a draft of a post I've written, but then it'll ask me, I say it, right? But the name of fill in the blank says, have you thought about this? Or is this is a good question? So they're not recommending that I put it in my article, but they are saying, here's a question that comes up, which allows me to continue writing that thinking and intellectualizing process that I think writers have to have, that it's not a one and done. It's more like a beginning and a process and drafting.
Right. And I think it's also another benefit. It's not necessarily a time efficiency of, oh, I didn't have to type out this whole paragraph. It's, oh, I would have left this element out if it weren't for the AI tool recommending that. Again, kind of changes your own manual process.
Well, we are about at time, and I feel like we could have kept talking. So perhaps, Dave, you will have time in the future to come back on our show.
Oh, I'd be honored.
Anyways, I hope you're having a wonderful week and hope you will catch this show and more shows as they come. And hopefully we'll have Dave back. A lot of the things that Dave and I talked about, you'll find them in the show notes, the links to so many of the tools that are mentioned here. Anything else? Any last words, Dave?
No, it's been great to be with you again, Yumi, and could always talk about this all day long. So hopefully by the time this airs and publishes, things haven't changed too much and some of what we talked about will still be applicable. But it's funny, like doing this newsletter every week, things change so quickly that it's really challenging to stay on top of. And, you know, journalists certainly have their own challenges and struggles. And this is kind of one more to add on to the pile, but there are certainly benefits from using these tools as well. So hopefully it becomes easier and better for journalists and communicators at large to be using AI.
Thanks for listening to AI in Journalism. If you liked what you heard, please hit that subscribe button. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to share your thoughts and suggest future topics or even guests. And remember to always keep questioning and keep growing.